Patricia Schultz's book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, inspired us to consider the many options we have for places and sites to experience in our lives. In her latest book, Patricia tackles the why of travel as she compiles her top travel lessons, personal stories, and practical tips. It's called Why We Travel, 100 Reasons to See the World. Patricia Schultz joins us today from her home base in New York City to talk about what makes travel so good for us. Patricia, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Rick.
So Patricia, before we get into why we travel, I'm just fascinated by how you ended up traveling so much. What got you started as a traveler and then a travel writer?
One pivotal moment, I was 4 years old and we were at the Jersey Shore. It was my earliest memory. I wandered away from the family beach blanket and set my mother into a tizzy, calling all of the lifeguards into action. And I never really felt lost. I just thought I was, you know, off on a big adventure. And this idea of, you know, discovery and excitement and the thrill of being outside what was familiar was very real to me, even in an early age.
The world's your playground, really.
Yeah. And then, you know, fast forward to 15, I was at a high school in upstate New York and befriended a lovely girl from the Dominican Republic. We became fast friends and she was going home to her family in Santo Domingo for the summer. And why didn't I come along? And we said, yeah, sure. Never thought it could actually happen. And lo, my parents, who were just remarkable parents, really never traveled much themselves at all other than Atlantic City, worked overtime, triple shifts, and put together a ticket, and off I went at 15 with my first passport, my first solo travel. And that kicked open the door, because that to me was just a whole entirely new world about which I knew nothing, coming from a small town in New York State. And that made quite a deep, indelible mark on my soul. And then as soon as I went to university, the minute I heard there was a junior year abroad program made available to us, was I interested. I started saving my shekels. And being immersed for a year in a foreign culture with different ways and different everything, Madrid is a fantastic city. That's where my program was. And I just fell in love with everything that was offered, both within the classroom, certainly without. And it's been pretty much nonstop ever since.
And you've spent literally decades thinking about travel. And now I would imagine, in part because of some time during the pandemic when we all have a chance to think about, wow, I can't travel and I want to travel, you've written a book called Why We Travel.
Yeah. It was a very opportune moment for me to step back, reflect, and find myself with all this time being stationary to put this book together. I thought, oh, I can knock this off in a few weeks, because the 1,000 Places tomes are very, very time-consuming. They take me years with each update. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
But a book of this kind, I thought, well, it's such a simplistic notion. I know why. But it's very profound. And to do a deep dive into the why of anything can be very revealing and very interesting. But what I did come up with, I hope, is what will be seen as a inspiration or a reminder to all of those of us who have become kind of lackadaisical, or, you know, the more we haven't traveled, the more maybe people aren't kind of, you know, happy not having traveled and, you know, cleaning out their closets. But I'm hoping this makes us realize all over again just how special it is and how fun and inspiring it is and how important it is to us.
Patricia Schultz loves what a good adventure can do for us. During the pandemic's closures, the author of the 1,000 Places to See Before You Die series had time to consider why traveling is so important for so many of us. Patricia's collected short essays, quotes, and images from her most memorable trips. It's in her latest book called Why We Travel, 100 Reasons to See the World. We have links to her work in the notes for this week's show. Look for program number 700 at ricksteves.com/radio. How have you learned? What's an example of how you talked about in Bali, you had an experience with a tooth filing. Is that an example of the kind of eurekas you get when you travel?
Yeah, the tooth filing ceremony in Bali is really something remarkable. And one of the things I suggest in the book is to accept all invitations And that sounds almost reckless. I mean, of course, we all need to exercise our radar and judgment of character. I don't, you know, invite myself into strangers' homes. But it was the owner of my Airbnb who knew me for 5 minutes and was being very rushed because he was finalizing all of the preparations for his 15-year-old daughter's tooth filing ceremony, which is their kind of coming of age, mostly for young girls, but also for young boys, where they file their canine teeth, but also all of the front teeth. And it's this age-old, either Balinese or Hindu or both, custom. And it's a very social thing, and the whole island, or certainly the whole village, takes place. And I hesitated, but I did accept at the end because, I mean, it wasn't a select crowd. It was open to the entire village, but I was swept up.
You know, that reminds me, once when I was in Bali, I got invited to be the photographer at a wedding. And I never thought of myself as a photographer on a wedding. I'm on vacation. But I said, sure, because I had the best camera around, you know, and being a tourist. And I got to take pictures at, I believe it was first the groom's house, and then we all got in pickups and we went over to the bride's house. And it was that same thing you're talking about, accept invitations. And that means, you know, letting serendipity do its thing. My mantra is, when an opportunity presents itself, say yes. And of course, you got to use your radar for safety and all of that. But that's fundamental. You also talked in your book about don't forget to look up and look down. I thought that was very wise.
Yeah, and that can be interpreted in so many different ways. But, you know, I think we get fixated on a certain perspective or just putting one foot in front of the other or just trying to get from A to B. And I think you miss a lot of the picture. You miss the other 90% of what surrounds you. Between, you know, the 14th century mosaic pavements that you're walking straight over on your way to getting to the exit, or you not looking up at remarkable, you know, Byzantine facades because you're just distracted or because of any reason. I mean, the beauty of any of these aphorisms that we learn is that all of this translates to the usual 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, day to day, same old, same old. And I think it all enriches your life because it all makes you more aware. It makes you more involved and more present.
I think related to that is your comment about going with the flow. You had a fun example in a hotel and you couldn't sleep because there was a big party going on before a U2 concert in Dublin. And you had the right attitude, didn't you? What did you do?
Yeah, already that alone sounds pretty exciting. It wasn't exciting in the moment because I was so exhausted. I cannot sleep on a flight, whether it's 2 hours or 12 hours. I just can't sleep on a plane. Didn't really bother to check the local headlines or newspapers. But long story short, U2 was coming into town. And I was one of 6 people that wasn't really impressed that they were doing a very infrequent concert, and the people, their fan base, who is so devoted, were flying in from all corners of the globe. It was such a big deal. So I grabbed whatever was available. It was a triple-priced, way overpriced room above a pub. But a very historical, well-known pub, if that meant anything. And so I got there, I arrived, I put my head on the pillow. I thought that, you know, jet lag would help me fall asleep within seconds. And suddenly, through my window on the 5th floor, there came this commotion, and I looked out, and the side streets were filled with people, and the pub and all of its customers had kind of overflowed into the surrounding area and were singing the entire repertoire from U2, and everybody knew every lyric from every song that was ever published. And I just kind of wandered about, and it literally was seconds before I was kind of embraced into this big crowd of everybody was on their 8th pint, and I was American. I had flown in from New York, they thought, for the concert.
Oh, yeah.
So it was great fun. I slept like an hour and a half that night.
Well, sometimes you're ready for a good night's sleep, and the situation is you're not going to get a good night's sleep. You can sit in the room and stew, or you can put on your shoes and go out there and join the
go
party.
Go out and dance.
Go with the flow. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about the reasons we get off the couch and get out and experience the world with travel writer Patricia Schultz. Her newest book is called Why We Travel, 100 Reasons to See the World. Patricia, serendipity, it's a beautiful thing. Travelers that know how to harness serendipity, I think, have more experiences. You wrote beautifully about serendipity in Morocco.
Yes, we showed up at the airport. The flight was canceled. We had no indication, no alert, no notice, anything. we didn't quite know what to do. We were leaving from Casablanca to Fez. It was a 45-minute flight, 4 or 5 hours by car, we thought, so we looked for a cab driver who might be available. And we met the loveliest, nicest, most gentle man called Mohammed. And he was going to take us there. We negotiated on the price. First, we asked him, however, if he could bring us for the best couscous in town. We were starved. And he got on his iPhone, very animated conversation that went on since forever. And he brought us to the outskirts of town, to his home, his mother, his wife, his twin daughters, and pretty much the entire neighborhood was waiting for us. We realized at that point that it was Friday, and it was the Islamic day when it's a family day. It's their day of worship and prayer, and it's their day for couscous. And it was pretty much the best couscous in all of Africa, if I dare say. It's a memory that I'll never forget. And his mother was very sweet. She didn't speak English, but she still sends me Christmas cards.
Oh, and you eventually got to your destination. That is a perfect example of harnessing serendipity, positive serendipity. And your flight got canceled. Okay, what are you going to do? You're going to enjoy a meal that you'll never forget for the rest of your life. Another thing you wrote about, which is kind of why we travel to me also, is having your what you expect flip-flopped. You went to Iran, and you wrote about how it was possibly the friendliest country you've ever traveled in.
Oh, boy, Rick, when I'm asked for my most eye-opening, surprising, you know, jolt out of everything destination. I'm in love with Iran. The Iranians are some of the loveliest and just gracious in a way that is part of their culture since forever, since the Persian Empire. You know, they talk to you. They are inviting you into their homes. They're giving you directions and suggestions for restaurants and where to go and how to, I mean, just an open immediacy and friendliness and curiosity. Everybody has, you know, an uncle teaching at the university in California. Everybody has family in Brooklyn. There's immediate friendship, and it's sincere, it's authentic, it's from the heart. And
it is from
everywhere.
The heart. It's, and I got, people told me before I went to Iran, it was really friendly, and I was skeptical. And I got to Iran, and I had the same experience you did.
I remember overwhelming.
When we were filming, I had a lot of downtime as the cameraman was working on stuff, and I would just walk around the block, and I was doing something we called eye fishing. I was walking around and just looking to catch eye contact with somebody, and as soon as I did, there was a conversation. And it was a wonderful conversation. It was just filled with curiosity and joy. I went into a bookstore, I remember, and I was just marveling at a beautiful book, but I wasn't shopping because I don't buy souvenirs when I'm packing light. And the woman in the bookstore realized I liked the book. I wasn't going to buy it. She just offered to give it to me. And
yes.
That's never happened to me in a bookstore before. I was in a traffic jam in Tehran, which I'll never forget. And we were just quiet, stopped. And the man in the next car asked my driver to roll down his window. He handed over a bouquet of flowers, and he said, "Give this to the foreigner in your back seat and apologize for our traffic." It's those kind of things. And I think you had the same kind of experience going to a country we're not supposed to go to. It's our enemies, you know, and we can overcome those misconceptions if we get those people-to-people connections. The title of your book, Why We Travel, boy, that's one reason right there, isn't it?
Oh, it's on the tippity-top of my short list.
What's your advice on culture shock?
Welcome it. I mean, you
Amen.
Want to...
I'm so glad you said that. Why?
Yeah, I mean, you want to be jolted out of these ideas that are fed us since the time we're, you know, 3 hours old and are reinforced by, usually by people who have never been to the destination that you're talking about. So, yeah, that all needs to be put aside. And you think maybe you do, and then you arrive in the three-dimensional and the here and now, and you realize that it is surprising, and you hope it is, because what have you saved all of that time and money to get on the flight and be there for in the first place? So
exactly.
I think you want to be surprised, and you want to embrace it, and you want to bring that home with you, because every place you visit, I think, becomes a part of you, or it should at least.
Ironically, a lot of people work really hard to avoid culture shock. And to me and to you, it's a constructive thing. I think we'd agree it's one of the reasons why we travel.
James Michener has a wonderful quote as well about how if you're going to avoid all of that, then just stay home.
Just stay home. Yeah, and that's not why we travel, that's for sure. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Patricia Schultz. We know her from her book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. And she's got a new book now. It's called Why We Travel, 100 Reasons to See the World. Patricia, one of the big challenges, I think, for travelers lately is How can we be present, to be in the moment, to be tuned in? There's so many people are lost in their screen or busy doing their Instagram selfies and so on, and we forget to actually be there. What's your advice?
Well, it seems to be inevitable and easy, I think, when you travel alone. So I know that many people hesitate, and a lot of people are just outright fearful of traveling solo. And not just women or females, but, you know, everyone. And I understand it. It's very understandable. I still get, you know, butterflies. I mean, all the what ifs. But do it once, because it's so empowering and it's so eye-opening. And it's such a very different experience than traveling with a friend. You bring a little bit of home with you. It gets a little too comfortable. You're sitting at the table in a restaurant and all you're talking about is her ex-boyfriend who keeps texting her and, you know, or all of the turbulations from home that you've brought with you, you know. So when you're alone, all of your senses are on alert in a very positive way, I think. You meet people more easily. Stuff comes to you more easily. That discussion we had about serendipity just finding you. But you need to be present. You need to put yourself out there. And if you're traveling with a group, sometimes people who travel alone will only travel with a group. They consider it traveling solo. It's not really in my book, but I think whatever gets you out of the house, whatever gets you off the sofa is fine with me. But alone, that's a whole other experience, and it's a very invaluable one.
You know, you mentioned to try it once, and it occurred to me, yes, a lot of people go through their whole travel careers, and they never even consider going alone, and they might not realize that'll open the door to much more richness in their travels. I think the first time I traveled alone, it was probably because something fell through and my partner couldn't go with me.
That's
always the case. And I got over there and it was a freedom. You know, I love to travel with the right partner. I always say, you know, a great way to travel is the right partner, and the loneliest people are the people who are stuck with the wrong partner in their travels. And much better than that is going alone. But I think going alone, just because you're going to be alone, opens you up to more experiences, and you might be more exposed to those beautiful reasons of why we travel.
Yeah, I really, really, I mean, from the heart, I so encourage it, because I don't know that anybody's come back and said, yeah, that wasn't a good idea. If anything, they come back just so proud, you know, that they've survived it, and they're already planning their next three trips alone. And some people then become very fixed on traveling only alone because they've understood how special it is.
You know, your advice of following serendipity and accepting invitations and going with the flow, these sort of fundamental skills for good travel, going alone greases the skids in every one of those examples, I would say.
Yes.
Patricia Schultz, thanks so much. It's always great to talk to you. And thanks for writing your new book, Why We Travel.
Thank you. Hope to see you soon, Rick.
Bon appétit, mademoiselle. Que vos désirs soient satisfaits. C'est pour affirmer notre zèle que nous chantons devant le buffet.
One great reason to travel to Europe is to immerse yourself in its many arts and cultural venues. There's likely to be a good one just a short walk away. We'll explore some of our favorites with conductor Lee Mills next on Travel with Rick Steves.